I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the New Statesman podcast that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week, we're talking about the BBC crime drama McMafia and the fourth series of Black Mirror.
We've also got a very exciting announcement about a new book-related thing that we're launching, so make sure you stay tuned to hear more about that later in the episode.
Hello. Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. It's our first episode of 2018. How exciting. Are you excited, Caroline?
I am excited. I also have the general January weariness, but other than that, it's a nice bit of work to be coming back to.
Yeah, it is. So I've been back at work 5 days and already Christmas seems like a distant memory. But I did have a really fun kind of movie-filled Christmas where I just kind of sat on the sofa and did pretty much nothing at all and just did not think about what was productive for me to watch for work at all. And it was great. I watched some old movies. I watched Laura, which is from 1944. And I watched Charade because I used to be an Audrey Hepburn fan, 17-year-old. And I watched, I think, all her movies except Charade. So I watched that for the first time as well. And that was quite fun. And I just love watching things like Guys and Dolls that are always on the telly over Christmas. They're just such great, especially post-Christmas. So you don't want a full-on Muppets Christmas Carol moment, but you do want something festive. So I really enjoyed watching a bunch of old musicals as well.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, we don't actually have a TV, which I don't normally
notice. Caroline, get a grip. Bloody hell.
I don't normally notice this at all because I just watch, whatever's on at the moment, but I watch it via catch up online, etc. But at Christmas, I did sort of notice because that is, I think, the one time of year where I do still normally plonk down in front of whatever's on rather than making deliberate selections, you know. My boyfriend got me the complete box set of All Creatures Great and Small.
Oh my God. What classic Caroline and Guy vibes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So we watch quite a lot of that. We're now on season four, I think.
That is so funny.
I also got a whole stocking's worth of All Creatures Great and Small things. So I now have a dog and cat salt and pepper shaker that are based on the dog and cat from
so
the show.
Cute.
And also, for 1 year, when I think it was super popular in the 80s, they made a Christmas annual, sort of like the Beano annual, but about vets. So yeah, I have one of those as well now.
Oh, that's so cute. What a great, well done, Santa. Good shout from Santa. I want to know, is your lack of TV a political choice or just disorganization?
I think it's partly a we don't know where it would go in our house because we have quite a small house and it's filled with stuff and I don't know.
I just think that's a terrible excuse. I think you should have a TV.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose just, I don't know. I think my boyfriend hasn't had one since he went to university. So he just is out of the habit.
If anyone's looking to buy Caroline and Guy a present, I think a TV. Best present they could be given this year.
I mean, I did have one in my various flat shares in London, but I cannot remember the last time I actually watched TV on it.
Not to be an Amazon Pro person, because, yeah, you know, capitalism, big corporations, blah, blah, blah. But I have an Amazon Fire Stick and I think it's great because it's like just laptop for your TV.
Well, that's the thing. Easy. We had a Chrome Stick for the same reason. Mm. Yeah. So we just watched like iPlayer and Netflix and stuff. So we did watch things on it, but that's what we do with a laptop here anyway, if you know what I mean. Mm. So what I mean is we didn't actually watch like terrestrial via an aerial on it ever. I'm not even sure the aerial was connected. We didn't know how to do that.
Yeah, so no, yeah, I don't think anyone really does that so much, but it's just like a laptop screen is so rubbish when you're trying to immerse yourself in something that
true.
Sometimes although it's nice, especially over Christmas and stuff, to have a
we do have ancient giant laptop, like back when they still made laptops that were like 20 inches. We have one of those.
Okay, well, we'll let you off for now, but I think as your future rolls on, you should invest in some sort of TV. Otherwise, I'm quitting seriously, just FYI. So we have some news, don't we, about upcoming developments with Seriously?
We do, yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this in the recommend segment because it is something that we are recommending to you. But basically, starting in January, the last episode of every month is going to be what we're calling the Seriously Book Club, where we're picking a new book each month that's just come out. We're going to interview the author and we're going to review the book, but we're going to give you a heads up a few episodes beforehand what the book is. So if you want to get hold of it and read it in advance, you can do that.
Exciting times, and very pro this as my development into someone who is literary continues.
Yes, that's I'm not gonna lie, that's partly why we're doing this, because I want to be, you know, like up with the books,
someone who reads books.
Yes, exactly.
So that's exciting, and we'll get on to that a bit later. But the first thing that we're going to talk about this week is McMafia, a new BBC crime drama based on a non-fiction book of the same name by Misha Glenny. It stars James Norton of Grant Chester fame as Alex Godman, a Russian brought up in Britain after his family went into exile. After a personal tragedy, he gradually gets drawn into the family's underworld business, which takes him all over the world and forces him to lie about who he is. So it's very much in that night manager space. Last year, The Night Manager was the kind of big spy drama that welcomed us into the new year with Tom Hiddleston and Hugh Laurie. And this is very similar in that it's very high budget and very slick and very violent. Well, you know, as violent as things on BBC One really get. And kind of politically complex, and I think is attempting to draw on what the writers consider to be like real world political threads. What did you make of it, Caroline? I mean, this is, I feel like, slightly outside of our comfort zone when it comes to TV watching.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, I have to say. And I kind of wanted to be on the basis that I really like James Norton. And, you know, I enjoyed the early Daniel Craig films when he was Bond, for instance. And I feel like this is sort of in this vein, very much like posh man in sharp suits. Investigates crimes all over the world or does crimes all over the world, who can say. But I found it quite like leaden. I just didn't really care about any of the characters
and totally.
I don't know, I don't think it's a good performance from James Norton either. Like I think he's trying to portray like inner conflict, but actually it just comes off as really cold, which I'm not really here for.
It's interesting. I so agree with all basically everything you're saying. And I think there are things that we as viewers consider to be prestige and like mature and like nuanced that sometimes I think are actually maybe slightly lazy and cheap and actually kind of a surface level depth, which is, you know, things like this idea of the James Norton character being like, oh, you can't tell what he's thinking, which was another element of The Night Manager, this like inscrutable lead male who's like, which side is he on really? And there's some dialogue that I think was maybe a bit too close to the bone where his uncle says, you know, look at him, he's like a wall, I might as well play tennis with him.
Oh God, rather than, that was really
and
bad.
You don't really want your characters to be saying stuff like that about the lead character like 5 seconds into it. It's a bit like you're getting hit over the head with it. And I just don't think that it's saying anything interesting, this programme.
No.
Like, it seems like a great excuse for the BBC to go to like a million different locations. Like, they really construe a reason for there to be a meeting in Versailles in the first episode.
Yeah, there's no reason for it to be there. You don't really see any of the interior of Versailles, and it's not important to the plot. It's just, I think, so they could do like a big exterior establishing shot of like a car arriving there. That's the only reason.
Yeah. And to have this ridiculously gilt interior and to feel the wealth kind of dripping off the walls. Mm. And there's these guys who are like dressed up in like French Revolution wigs, and you know, it's stupid and hammy and ridiculous, but I think it thinks it's very, very kind of like glossy and serious. And there's a moment in that where James Norton is handed a caviar knife, and it's like very loaded because the caviar knife has been used as a murder weapon earlier in the episode. And it's just a bit like, again, it's just like, this is so ridiculous that you're saying, like, well, we get it. The caviar knife is a metaphor for like extreme wealth, and extreme wealth is dangerous and violent and involves the exploitation of other people. And like, we get that. But again, it's one of those things that fetishizes what it's criticizing in a way that is so blatant that I can't take it seriously. Like, why are we having this scene in Versailles in the first place if not to fetishize this exact stuff that you're saying is problematic? It's just stupid.
It also has the exact same problem that the night manager had as well, although worse, which is that pretty much all the female characters just stand around looking nice.
Mm.
So the night manager was marginally better on this because it had Olivia Colman in a fairly prominent like investigator role. So she got quite a lot of actual plot lines and scenes where it wasn't about what she was wearing. But the Elizabeth Debicki character in The Night Manager was incredibly objectifying and basically existed so that we could like look at her wearing backless dresses. And I have to say, I've only watched the first episode of McMafia because I didn't like it and I don't want to watch anymore. But so far we've seen his mum, who wears furs and talks about her husband.
Says things like Chanel and Dior.
Yeah, his girlfriend, who is supposed to be this kind of hotshot, transparency, financial person.
Yeah, like a moral figure, but doesn't actually have any personality.
Really, yeah, or any like inner life. There's a theme here. And that's basically it. Oh, and also like a woman who tried to get off with him in an Israeli club. That's it. Like, and all of them would just, and to be fair, his mother is an older woman too, but she's also just there for what she looks like and what she's wearing. Yeah, I think that's a big problem of the kind of spy genre. But it doesn't have to be. Like, I wanted to shout out to a series a couple of years ago now, I think, that I really enjoyed called London Spy, which starred Ben Whishaw, which had a queer sort of love affair at its heart. And it was all about the relationship between these two men, one of whom was a spy. And Ben Whishaw's character was like gradually finding this out about his lover. And, you know, so it is possible to work in this genre without falling into the sort of Bond girl trope. But it doesn't seem like they were very interested in this show.
Totally. And it's one of those things as well that the plot is overly complex. And again, it feels like something that the writers think is very clever to have a very overly complex plot. But I'm not sure what the point is of like deliberately making something obscure, and because it just makes it less enjoyable, and it doesn't mean that the kind of themes and the characterization or anything else is any more developed. So I don't know. For me, it's just like, I'm like, sure, I'm slightly confused about what's going on, but is that actually a benefit to this program?
Yeah. The other thing they've made a big deal of with this program is that they've cast like actual Russian actors as Russian and Georgian actors as pretty much all of the Russian parts, which, you know, cool, that should happen more in things, that they should cast people of the actual origin of the thing they're portraying. And they've also hyped quite a lot of the fact that it's, you know, had international cooperation from different studios, you know, so it's being shown in other countries with different subtitles and all this kind of stuff. But again, that doesn't make it good. I would say there are other examples. Like, I'm really excited for series 4 of The Bridge, which is coming really soon. And that's famously an example of a co-production between Danish and Swedish television, where the cooperation between the two countries and the two languages is like the whole point of the show, and it's everywhere in the whole thing. Whereas this seems a lot more like, we put a famous British man in it, and now also some Russian people, and a press release about that. You know, it doesn't feel like integral to it. As you say, it feels superfluous.
So not for us, basically, McMafia, but other people may very well enjoy it. It's just not a Seriously Gal bag, so I won't be returning to it either, I don't think. Sorry, James Norton.
You're sorry, Grant Chester, we still love you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now we're going to talk about the fourth series of Black Mirror, which arrived on Netflix on the 29th of December. Over its 6 episodes, it features the series' customary exploration of the dystopian effects of technology, tackling topics including parenting, virtual reality, and dating, with the likes of Jodie Foster, Maxine Peake, Joe Cole, Michaela Cole, and lots more lending their talents both in front of and behind the camera. We actually talked a little bit about Hang the DJ on our festive TV special, because it sort of came out in that between Christmas and New Year period. But I've now watched 2 more episodes, Archangel and USS Callister. You've watched all of them though, right, Anna?
I have, yeah. And it's a real mixed bag, I would say, in terms of quality. But I think the 2 that you've watched were good ones. We won't talk about them in detail, but I really thought Crocodile was a low point, and I also didn't enjoy Metalhead and Black Museum particularly either. So I think it's I think they're a good couple to
I've accidentally
about.
Seen the highlights.
Yeah, then. I think I what I'll say about the ones that I didn't enjoy so much is that I thought Crocodile is this weird one about a woman's kind of descent into increased violence, and you're just given no reason as to why she's behaving in the way that she's behaving. And sometimes I think Charlie Brooker and the team behind Black Mirror aren't great at really in-depth characterization.
No, that's fair, I think.
And I think it comes through in the episodes that focus on characterization a bit more, like Crocodile. Like you just needed more to it for it to justify what it was doing. But I think one thing that's interesting is things like Hang the DJ kind of gesture towards a deeper characterization and never fully go there, but at least they kind of like wave a hand at it. But anyway,
Archangel as well, you sort of feel like maybe you're getting a glimpse of the characters, even if actually when you think back after you finish, you're like, I actually don't know anything about them.
Yeah, I don't know anything about their interests or their how they would describe themselves. Or, but yeah, should we start with USS Callister, because it's the first in the bunch, which I thought was probably the highlight of the 6. I think it was funny And I liked the setup. It starts with a kind of 10-minute long Star Trek parody, which is very weird and kind of shot in a vintage style with a, like, you know, a squarer aspect ratio and more 60s colours. Then we realise that this is a game that this guy who's a coder and game developer has developed himself. And the kind of twist of the episode, which comes fairly early on, is that the other players in the game are exact replicants of people who have wronged him in his office. And he's using the game to, like, torture these simulations that still have, like, real feelings and memories and sensations and so on. And I just liked that setup, and I thought that it was handled with humour and quite well.
Yeah, and actually, I think the thing that we know Black Mirror for from previous series is for putting a kind of pop culture spin on the ethical dilemmas relating to technology, right? Mm. And I actually felt in the ones that I watched, weirdly, even though this is supposed to be a kind of, in some ways, lighter, funnier episode, this is the one that does that the best, because it's basically saying, can clones have feelings? Like, mm. you've made these digital clones of people that you know, you're essentially torturing them in some cases, like you're using them for really horrible stuff. They don't have any connection with the real people they're based on. So the real people aren't feeling any of the things, but mm. is it still wrong? Like, it's almost like I did like AS level philosophy. It's the kind of problem they would pose you in a class to be like, where's the harm? What's happened? You know, so in that sense, I did think it was like a true Black Mirror episode.
Totally. It made me think of The Sims, which is obviously not the same. But I have two friends at school. The Sims was massive when I was at school. Two of my friends fell out over a goldfish. And then my friend who played Sims created the other friend in Sims. Well, she was already in a version of Sims that she was playing with all her friends in it. And she like put her in a like padded cell with no windows and like watched her like starve to death. As like a kind of weird revenge on this like other 12-year-old, and we all thought it was really funny at the time, and obviously I still find that funny and hilarious, but it's like that impulse to kind of like get some petty revenge on someone via a game is definitely a real thing, because I've seen it with my two eyes.
Yeah, I know. Like, I remember loads of people playing Sims had made their own families and then, like, set fire to their siblings and stuff
exactly.
like that.
It's so fucked up and weird, but yeah. also it's not hurting anyone, realistically. Like, I mean, I'm no expert, but I don't think Sims have thoughts and feelings. I think they're just a bunch of pixels on a screen. But, yeah, the question, as you say, is kind of, like, it more interestingly, philosophically, than some of the other ones, or at least it's more clearly posed than some of the other ones. Like, I don't really know if that is the same question they're asking in Hang the DJ or not, because we're not really given enough time to consider whether the simulations like go on to still
have
exist
lives
after
yeah.
the episode. Yeah, exactly. So it was at least more clear and more obviously problematizing something than some of the others. But I also just felt that it was done well, like the characterization came through a bit better with this kind of like toxic male lead
yeah.
who we could kind of see as being taken advantage of. It was a very classic narrative of the kind of like nerdy guy being kind of like outdone by more confident male peers and then having a resentment that he kind of like uses and lashes out with elsewhere. So I believed it. I felt like the people they were talking about were real people. I thought the performances were really good. I thought Michaela Cole was really great in it, for
She
example.
Was really good, like, yeah.
I believed her. I totally believed her as this kind of like confident, smiley woman who was like, watch out, he's a bit of a starer. And then was more survival oriented in the game. And yeah, it was funny. I found the lines about like them not having genitals and things like that really funny. As well as dark. So for me, it really, really worked.
Yeah, I think it's good fun. So then the other one that I watched is Archangel, and it's not funny at all. This is the one that's directed by Jodie Foster. And this is, I think I saw one piece describing it as like helicopter parenting done to the extreme. And so it's about a woman and her daughter, and you first see them at the very beginning during the birth, and then you see her daughter like grow up into a toddler and then into a preteen and then a teenager. And early on, when she's like just walking, essentially, like the mother loses her in the park and obviously freaks out and takes her to some dystopian company that implants a little chip in her brain, which means that henceforth the mother can use this iPad type device to, well, the key functions of it are she can see whatever her daughter is seeing, like see out of her eyes. She can rewind in her memories to see previous things that have happened to her, and she can put this kind of content filter on, so anything bad or horrible, like as she's looking at the world, it's being blurred out.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of in the functions that you're describing there, I think reminiscent of earlier Black Mirror episodes. The entire history of you was the one where they could like flick through their own memories all the time and each other's memories, and there's an element of that in this episode as well. But it's an interesting one because I think it's another good one in that it taps into something real, which is how technology is aiding parenting and making parenting maybe a bit more invasive, because you do have more control over what your kids see. I mean, obviously it's a giant leap to get to that, and like the idea that you could literally blur out something your child is currently visualizing in the real tangible world. And some people might struggle with that, to suspend their disbelief to that level. But I thought it was just very well observed, the kind of moral dilemma that you would be in as a parent in those situations. And again, even though I didn't feel like we got a really broad sense of the characters in terms of who they are as people, the performances were good enough and the script was good enough that you did get like a little bit of insight into their mother-daughter dynamic. And I think it's a classic mother-daughter dynamic. And
it is, yeah.
I really liked how they did it, yeah.
Yeah, because she, after like being convinced, I think, by a therapist that like the implant, which is called Archangel, that's where the title of the episode comes from, isn't really doing their relationship any good, she puts the iPad away for years. And then once her daughter is a teenager and starts doing normal teenage things like going to parties and lying about where she is, she gets it out again. And that's where it all kind of unravels, because like she sees that her daughter is having sex, like going out with this drug dealer guy and generally doing things that as the mother she would not like her to be doing. And so she starts directly intervening, like crushing up a emergency contraceptive pill in her daughter's morning smoothie and like using the technology to control her daughter's life. And of course the daughter finds out and then everything goes pear-shaped. So yeah, it is. And I think maybe for people who are already parents, it is a very interesting debate. Like I know we had some family visiting over Christmas who have young kids, and they were saying how they'd kind of got to an age where they were having to talk about like, do we let them watch YouTube? Do we only supervise them on YouTube? Do we only let them use the like YouTube Kids app, even though there is stuff on there that is really horrible that has been disguised as kids videos? Like, there are all these questions now that as a parent you have to ask yourself that you maybe didn't have to ask yourself even 5 years ago. So, totally. Yeah, I think it is a dilemma that like, if you could do that, should you, would you? I don't know.
Yeah, and the performances were really good. I think that was where the real strength of the episode came through, and Rosemary DeWitt is really cool and great.
There was a bit of controversy. I read a piece, I think it was in The Cut, about how the writers of this episode had confused emergency contraceptive and abortion medication.
Yeah, I also thought that.
That in doing so, that was really unhelpful. And it's an interesting piece. I'll link it in the show notes, because I did think that when I watched it, but I kind of thought like, oh, they've kind of created a device for a TV show. Like, where's the harm? But actually they pointed out that is a trope that anti-choice people in America often use. They say, oh, you take this pill and then you have an abortion, when actually that's not remotely what emergency contraceptive is.
No,
it just helps restrict access to these things.
And they weren't clear on how long it had been and whether she was like provably pregnant or it was an odd part of the episode that actually, but that's interesting. We should put that in the show notes.
It was just interesting that it kind of the writer was saying, like, this is the kind of thing, if you hire more women writers for your TV show, you will not have these problems. Yeah, it's worth, if you're watching the episode, it's worth bearing that in mind, I think. But overall, how did you, having watched the whole series, Charlie Brooker has said that he tried to be a little bit more hopeful with this series. Did you get that impression?
I do think it was like broadly a bit lighter, but I think for me, there's still something missing from Black Mirror in terms of, like, it's a good kind of hypothetical. Each episode can be like an interesting hypothetical question, but don't we want more than that from TV? Maybe we don't. Maybe it's just like another venue to explore these kinds of things. But yeah, I was talking with some friends of Seriously, like Barbara Speed, Amelia Tate, Stephanie Boland about this. And everyone was quite like, yeah, he doesn't write people very well. And he writes out of situations, not characters. And that means sometimes that his shows are a bit thin. I don't know how well they would stand up to rewatching, for example.
Yeah, but I was considering rewatching San Junipero, actually, to test this, being like the one that I've liked the most, I think, of all of them.
Yeah, it's an interesting experiment. But yeah, it's fine. And like, big fans of Black Mirror will still find something to enjoy in the series for sure.
So just to explain a little bit more about this book club thing we mentioned at the start. So the actual episode will be on the 30th of January, and that's going to be our interview, our first author interview and our review of the book. But we should tell you now what the book is that we're going to read. And it is a crime thriller called The Innocent Wife by Amy Lloyd, which is out now, so you can get hold of a copy and start reading ahead. So I've actually read this book already, and it's a really interesting blend of, so it is in some ways like a crime thriller story that you will recognize from all kinds of, like, you know, Lee Child is one of the people who's like endorsed it on the cover. That's very much the sort of space it's in. But it's got a really interesting twist on it, because the protagonist, a girl called Samantha, first gets involved with the, like, criminal at the heart of the whole story because of a true crime documentary series that, I mean, when we interview Amy, we will ask her about this, no doubt. But to me, it's very much like Serial.
Okay, interesting.
Because she gets involved after she... It's actually, I think it's a film series rather than a podcast in the story, but after she, like, sees the film series, she gets involved in all these online forums, which reminded me very much of the Reddit threads that grew up after Serial. And she gets involved in this whole, like, online community of people who are convinced that this guy's been wrongly convicted. And that's sort of how the story unravels. I won't say any more now because it will spoil it for you, and I want you all to read it and tell us what you think.
I'm so excited. It sounds like it would be a good pairing to my current love of the moment, Search Party. So
very much so, yeah.
I'm excited, really, really excited for this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I started reading the book after lunch on a Saturday, and I finished it in the early hours of Sunday morning.
Classic. Okay, brilliant.
So yeah, we will put a link to the book in the show notes so that you can find your own copies. And yeah, stay tuned at the end of the month for our extended chat about it.
Can't wait. And so what are we doing for our usual recommend?
So for next week, given that after the big, like, festive bump of stuff being released, there's now not a huge amount out in the next couple of weeks while we wait for, like, award season films to start dropping and all that kind of thing, we thought we might have a bit of a throwback, because I think I'm right in saying, Anna, that you have never watched classic sitcom Arrested Development.
No, I never have. I feel like I know things about Arrested Development. I know that a banana could only cost $10 and other things. But I've never actually sat down and watched a full length episode. My boyfriend's into it, and one of my boyfriend's really good friends is really into it. So I have it on good authority that it's obviously a great show, but I've never watched a full episode. So this is something I'm really looking forward to doing.
Oh, I'm really excited for you to watch it. I was actually really late to it myself. I only watched the whole thing about 2 years ago. But when I did watch it, I feel, now this is a strange two things to put in the same sentence, but I'm going to do it anyway. I felt the same as when I first saw Hamlet, and also when I, like, watched Buffy. in the sense that, you know, when you like you read or watch Hamlet and you're like, oh, that's where all these expressions that people use all the time come from.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And ditto Buffy, like you're like, oh, that's why everyone says X, Y, and Z. It's like, for me, I feel like it's a show that's like entered slang.
I thought you were going to say like the three most pivotal culture moments of my life, Buffy, Hamlet, and Arrested Development, which would
Hamlet
have been
would not
banter.
Be in my top three.
Of course, Hamlet saying, must no. be up there. No jokes.
No, Hamlet, I've just put it on record, Hamlet, not a very good play.
Hamlet, but, trash, put it in the bin. You heard it
genuinely,
first.
I will seriously. Talk about this at great length. I do not think it's a good play. But anyway, yeah, it's got like some real greatest hits. If you're into GIFs on Tumblr, you will know Arrested Development, even if you haven't actually watched the show.
Okay, great. Cannot wait. That's such a high compliment. Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including on Apple Podcasts, where you could leave us a rating and a review if you fancy. It makes us happy, and it also helps other people find the show.
If you'd like to come and see us in person, check out the events page of our website, seriouslypod.com/events. Details of our next pop culture quiz and anything else we're doing will appear there.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them. Follow us to keep up with what we're up to, or to chat to other listeners about things you've enjoyed on the show.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.